I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show. I'm Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host. My guest today, Jessica Richards, is a personal trainer and leadership development specialist who has a practice in Harley Street, London. Her work reaches beyond helping people gain creative insight into their purpose, direction, and meaning of life. She is particularly committed to helping people find their leadership potential and to help leaders go further in their lives and work by changing the grounding day process, which identifies and resolves self-limiting beliefs that are life-changing. She has been a clinical hypnotherapist since 1985 and works with corporations and was voted by the Academy of Chief Executives as one of the top three speakers of the decade. Her book, The Topic of Cancer, about her cancer journey, was followed by a contributed chapter in Cancer Revolution, and she has published other papers and fulfilled speaking engagements. Jessica was diagnosed with breast cancer in May 2007. Her doctors told her she needed chemo, a mastectomy, breast reconstruction, 6 weeks of radiotherapy, and 5 years of hormone blockers. However, she decided she wanted to beat breast cancer holistically without traditional medicine interventions, and recently celebrated her 10-year cancer-free anniversary. More information is available at jessicarichards.co.uk. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Jessica, and I look forward to hearing about your cancer journey. Now, you were diagnosed 10 years ago, and what was your initial diagnosis?
Oh, hello, Carl. Yes, my initial diagnosis was 3.5-centimeter invasive ductal carcinoma with associated DCIS. It was breast cancer. It's 3.5 to 4 centimeters. Mm-hmm. And I had a lymph node biopsy. They took 2 sentinel nodes and 1 non-sentinel node. One of the sentinel nodes had single cell. The other one had a micrometastasis, so a small cluster of cells. And the third non-sentinel node had nothing at all.
Mm-hmm. And what symptoms did you have, Jessica?
Well, it was a funny thing because a few years before I had an old jelly-like lump in my breast, and I had all of the tests. I had the usual examination and everything. And then I had mammogram, then I had ultrasound scan. They kept coming back inconclusive. And the final one, I had a fine needle biopsy. And I think it was someone who wasn't very experienced in doing that. And that all came back as negative. But I said to my partner at the time that after that biopsy, my breast changed shape. I thought the lump was sticking out. But what I realized later on, it started tethering and had become active. I didn't realize that at the time. And I said, I'm sure when I get the letter with the results, they're going to tell me that it's positive. Mm-hmm. But I didn't. I got the opposite. And so, stupidly, I didn't do anything else about it until a few years later, at the age of 50. And won't you have just a call for a mammogram anyway? And I knew then that I'm almost certainly going to get a recall and a positive diagnosis, which was exactly what happened. Mm-hmm. But by that stage, the tumor had got very calcified and huge.
Mm-hmm. And what was the prognosis?
Initially, I found out retrospectively that because of the clinical characteristics of my disease, including what was in the lymph node, I had a below average chance of surviving beyond 5 years.
Mm-hmm. And what did the doctor prescribe?
Initially, because I went to several hospitals in the end to interview various people, I was initially prescribed first the lymph node biopsy, which I had, which was a diagnostic rather than a prescription. Mm-hmm. After that, I was offered 2 lots of chemotherapy, the second lot accelerated, so every other week instead of every week, then a partial or total mastectomy with reconstruction, but the partial one would also require a reconstruction, followed by 6 weeks of radiotherapy and up to 6 years of drug therapy.
Hmm. And what treatments did you, what did you use along with this?
Well, I didn't use anything along with it, in a sense, because I never did any of those treatments. I've never had any medical treatment or any surgical intervention other than the diagnostic lymph node biopsy.
And so what did you use, Jessica?
Right. Well, I also want to make it clear that I made decisions along the road, because I always think it's important to have an open mind on things. And I didn't base any of my decisions on belief. I didn't have the luxury of belief. I'm a rational person. So I research forensically and ask questions. So originally, I was going to have the surgery. I decided against the chemo because I didn't think I was going to survive it, and it seemed quite an irrational thing to do anyway.
Right, right.
For me at the time. So I booked in for surgery, and I had the date. It was July the 12th, 2007. In the meantime, I saw an integrated doctor. He was a medical doctor for over 20 years, and he now practices in a clinic, runs his own clinic, and does integrated health treatments for any disease, really. I went down to see him and said, look, this is my situation. I would like to do two things. One of them is to prep so that I'm as fit as possible before surgery, and my body is as anti-cancer as possible in case there are any cells flying around. And secondly, I would like after surgery to come here and do intravenous vitamin C and everything else that I need in order to recover. So I was looking to destroy the cancer environment in my body and really assist my immune system to be as optimum as possible before I went in for such a major surgery. That changed only because 3 weeks, I went on a very strict diet, metabolic diet, which is pretty much vegan. I wasn't totally carb-free because I'm quite a skinny person, and I can't, I've got a body type that doesn't do well totally without carbs. And within 3 weeks, that tumor that was as hard as concrete, they tried to do a biopsy on it, a core biopsy, and had 5 attempts. And it didn't work out. And I stopped her in the end because she was trying to break it open. And I just said, this doesn't feel right. So she had to take cells from the outside of the tumor. So this was before then I was booked in for surgery. And when I went on to that diet, as well as nutrition, so supplements and things, within 3 weeks, that tumor just collapsed to jelly. So I didn't know what that meant. All of my alternative practitioners are also medics, because I prefer people with a foot in both worlds. And I want those who prescribe, as well as read blood tests and scans, etc. So I went back to the integrated doctor. He said that, you know, you're changing your metabolism. It will have that effect. It's a typical response. He said, if you ask the alternative, they'll all say it's brilliant. But what I would suggest is you go back to your hospital, and then you go to a hospital where they haven't met you before and have a scan so you can get a proper monitoring of what's actually going on. So I went back to the original hospital, and they said, well, actually, no, this was about the second hospital. I went to a few, because I wanted to find the right team. But anyway, they said, they were saying, oh, it's changed now, this is no good, you know, we can't do that kind of surgery. Because at first they thought it would be quite relatively simple with me, because I'm and was and still am extremely fit. They said, you know, with such a hard defined tumor, it'd be very easy to remove that with, and it'd be very unlikely to find anything in the margins, which is the centimeter or about half an inch of tissue they take off around the tumor. And also I would heal up quickly. They described to me as a surgeon's dream, in that everything is in the right place and I'm very unlikely to have any complications. When I went back to them, they said, look, it's really not defined now, we can't do that. So it's going to need to be a much bigger surgery, and we want to take all of your lymph nodes, which I wasn't convinced with, because they kept assuring me they wouldn't find anything else. And I said, well, if you're so sure, and they even said, you know, I'd bet money on it, that if I was a gambler, I would bet money on it, we will not find any more. So we're never doing people that have the result that you had. So my question was an obvious one to me. Well, why do you want to take them all then?
Right.
And it kept, they just kept saying, because it's safer. And I said, well, safer than what? I said, as far as I understand, that's part of my immune system, where I need it the most. So why would you undermine it or compromise it? And they just kept saying, well, to be safe. And I said, well, I just don't understand enough to accept that at the moment. So anyway, that was left open-ended. Mm-hmm. So they cancelled the original surgery because there wasn't time then, because it needed to be more extensive. I went to another hospital. These are both university cancer hospitals. Mm-hmm. And the first one was solely cancer. The second one was a university general hospital, but mm-hmm. there's lots of specialists in it. I met a very bullying consultant in there, the only one that I did meet. The others were all very respectful and wanted to help, but mm-hmm. didn't really know how. And he said, oh, your lymph node positive, you've got to have all your lymph nodes removed, and you probably left it too late anyway, you're unlikely to survive. Well, I was only 3 months into it.
Mm-hmm.
I was diagnosed on May the 11th, and this was September the 7th. So according to him, I had already left it too late. So I had the scan. I didn't say anything because I just wanted the scan. And when I went in to see the radiologist, I had an ultrasound scan, and I said to him, can you tell from a scan if a tumour is still invading or not, or if it's become inactive? And he said, sometimes you can. And he said, look, I'll show you. And he had a look over it, and he said, that is the outline of the tumour, and it's lying completely flat on the tissues. And he looked up at me and said, that's a very positive sign that your treatment's working.
Mm-hmm.
So from that point, I thought, well, for the time being, I'm going to postpone surgery, because if everything's under control for now, I don't want to start prodding and poking around with it again. And I want to carry on with what I'm doing, because it's like a runaway truck as far as I was concerned.
Right.
I've obviously slowed it down. I need to stop it and turn it around, and then I'll make decisions as I go along with constant monitoring. Mm-hmm. At that point, I realized there's no way I was going to go back to that aggressive bully for him to be my doctor in any way, shape or form.
Mm-hmm.
And I searched for someone else. So after it took me 5 months to find a consultant who lives mm-hmm. about 125 miles from me. And it's a horrible drive in the UK because they're horrible kind of motorways or freeways we have mm-hmm. here that are super, super busy. It's like trying to get to the airport at Los Angeles, you know, that sort of
right.
congestion, but with half the road base. And, of course, we're all driving on the wrong side of the road.
Right, right.
So my doctor wrote to him and asked him if he would consider me. And I didn't hear anything for ages, and I was, in the meantime, I was having full-on treatments at the clinic. That's when I started the intravenous vitamin C.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to the doctor down there, look, you know, I'm gonna be working without a net now. I'm going to have to come in and do it all alternative, because the surgery is not viable for me at the moment, and I discussed my reasons why. And I eventually phoned up the secretary of this other consultant, and I said, look, I've sent my stuff to him. I haven't heard from him, and I'm a bit concerned because I really would like to be monitored at a hospital if I can.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, well, what I can tell you, he's very, very popular. He's an NHS consultant, and there are patients from all over trying to get to see him, even though they're not in his area. And she said he's been through a pile of papers just this week, and he pulled out about half a dozen patients that he will see. And she said, I can tell you your name was on the list.
Mm.
So I was overjoyed. And I've been with him ever since.
Mm-hmm.
We had a discussion, and this was the most interesting thing for me. The first thing he said to me, he just sat there quietly. I had all of my paperwork with me, copies of everything. And he said to me, just tell me how you got to be here today. And so I told him the story factually mm-hmm. and chronologically, gave him my paperwork. He examined me, and then he said to me, okay. He said, I don't know whether you'll survive or whether you'll succumb, because only time would tell that. Mm-hmm. Which was completely acceptable to me. The rest of it, things I've been told, that I was going to die or this, that and the other, that's just belief, and I don't put any store in that. He said, however, I can tell you that at the present moment in time, you are not in any immediate danger. He said, as for the lymph node question, I've done the biggest lymph node trial in existence, to my knowledge, and he said, I've done over 1,000 surgeries so far. This was over 10 years ago. And he said, I have never found anything else in people that have the result that you've had. So I agree with you. You shouldn't have any more lymph nodes removed because it isn't safe. So he was the only one who was really qualified
mm-hmm.
to give me that information. He did add, however, we shall remember that the enemy has visited. That was acceptable. So I said to him, would you agree to be the doctor in my team? And he said, yes. He said, on condition, he said, if your treatment doesn't work out in the way that we would hope that it would, then you'd be open to discuss what the wonders of medical science may have to offer you as well as. So I said, that's acceptable. So that was our deal.
Mm-hmm. Great.
And we've been together ever since. We're actually working on two projects together now as well.
Good, good. Now, you mentioned the carbohydrates. Not all doctors want to eliminate those. Mine, you know, told me I could have my diet, which was the vegan, was fruit, vegetables, nuts, and grains, but minimal grains. And I could have fruit. I didn't have any problem with that. But some go have that ketogenic diet where they eliminate the carbohydrates.
That's right. Well, mine wasn't a ketogenic diet, but it was a version of the Gerson diet, although there was no way for me personally I was going to juice on the hour every hour, because if that's what it was going to take for me to stay around, it's no deal.
And see, I didn't juice either. What I did was eat a lot of salads, because mine...
Yeah, I did juice, actually, but there's no way I was going to be so strict with it. I'm doing juicing every hour on the hour.
Well, in 74, we didn't have juicing.
And oh, of course you didn't. No.
No. And so I ate a lot of salads because my doctor wanted me to have 75% raw fruit and vegetables, so I ate a lot of salad. And I would just eat, like, I would carry cauliflower, cabbage. I'd carry vegetables with me and eat those just as they are. You know?
What an unusual perfume you must have had.
Well, you know, when it's a matter of life, you'll eat the things that you might not otherwise. The other thing I wanted to ask you, Jessica, and that is, you said you did other supplements. Can you tell us what those supplements were?
Well, I've got to remember now, and they were specific to me, but there are a lot of the general ones, you know, like curcumin, pancreatic enzymes, intravenous vitamin C, of course. What else are there? I'm just trying to think. It was such a long time ago now. Mm-hmm. It was such a whole protocol of stuff. And I've never really focused that much on it, because it's so individual per person. So many times over the years, people have just wanted to replicate exactly what I did, which is not necessarily the best way forward. But I followed, I did DIM, diindolmethane, or indole-3-carbinol, which is diindolmethane, the more stabilized version of it, and other such nutritional supplements. Mm-hmm. Which I believe as well, over the years, you know, things are changing a lot now. So what I did might not be completely relevant now, but it sure worked for me.
Well, I consider mine still relevant.
I still take supplements. There's no doubt about that.
Right. You can't get the Wobi Mogus pancreatic enzymes that I use. They've been banned in this country.
Yeah.
And also, I understand, in France, I don't know where else, but there's a
Well, the European Union closed down a lot of ours as well. If they hadn't
on
the market for 15 years, they were wiped out. So there's a lot of very useful high-dosage supplements that we can't get now, for our safety, of course.
Right. I mean, they're so helpful to us. They feed us genetically modified foods. But they take pancreatic enzymes from us.
I know.
As an example.
Because they take such good care of us. You and I are speaking on a phone and not a Ouija board.
Right. Now, you did mental spiritual interventions as well.
Yeah, I'm kind of that way inclined anyway. I've been a clinical hypnotherapist for over 30 years now. Mm-hmm. And I've done a lot of spiritual work over the years, just because I'm that way inclined. It's always been an interest to me. I've always been a meditator. Mm-hmm. I used to meditate and chant when I was 4 or 5 years old, but I didn't know that that was what I was doing until I looked back on it and realized that's exactly what I was doing. So you have to address those sides of it. And of course, all the stress stuff in your life, and mine wasn't a bad stress, but after a while you can get, I think you become bogged down with a constant low level of stress without any let up.
Right. It's interesting you said you didn't know what the meditation was. I said to my mother once, do you meditate? And she said, what that? And I told her. She said, oh, I've done that all my life. I didn't know that's what you called it.
That's right. I didn't as a child. I'd never even heard of the word. I don't think anybody had then. It was early 60s. I was born late 50s. So, you know, it's before it became popular. Been around for thousands of years, but wasn't quite popular in the Western world.
And did you have a good support system?
Not necessarily. After I was diagnosed, my mother was diagnosed shortly after me with a different kind of a cancer, quite a rare one. So I ended up having to help look after her as well. She chose the conventional route. And then, like a lot of people do, when that doesn't work out, wanted to do the alternative route. Then I split up with my partner after 11 years. We'd known each other for about 20 years. It was my decision, but it was still a very stressful time. And then my father died as well. Also, my old mentor, who I'd been with for 27 years, he died about 3 months before my father, an American man, Gil Boyne, and his stepson, who I'd been friends with since we were in our 20s when I first went to the States. He was killed in a car crash a few months before that. It was quite an onslaught of stuff that would normally cause cancer or be the catalyst for it. And of course, I had it all afterwards. And it was the beginning of a recession here. And also, of course, I work a lot with corporates and they book a year in advance. Well, if they find out you've got cancer, not many want to take that chance, which is quite understandable.
Right.
And so I really went to the wall financially as well. So it was a challenging time, to say the least. I've had better years.
And what have you done since to prevent recurrence?
Well, I've continued with everything that really worked for me. There are certain things. I mean, we can't all be expert on cancer. You know, you need several lifetimes for that. But I am an expert on me. So I know my body responds brilliantly to diet and almost instantly to diet. So I had a good diet anyway, but it's super good. I virtually live just on fruit and vegetables, not much else. Occasional piece of fish, but really not much at all. Practically never touch dairy. Occasionally, the odd thing slips in only because I'm doing corporate events and things. And if you don't have something, you'll have nothing. But I haven't eaten meat for over 45 years anyway, so that's absolutely not going to happen. It's just not my thing. And when it comes down to stress, I just have a simple process that I use to gauge whether something's worth it or not. And I just ask myself, is this situation or is this individual worth dying for? And I haven't met one yet that was. So that's very easy to sort that out. Then I won't deal with that situation and I won't deal with that individual.
I haven't eaten meat in about 45 years either. And I doubt that our stomach could handle it.
Would you know, Carl, mine couldn't handle it anyway, even as a child. That's why I stopped eating it when I was about 15. I mean, it still fed to me when I was very young because everyone thought you'd die without meat. And I remember people saying to me when I was about 16, you know, what, don't eat meat? What do you eat then? You know, lettuce. And I used to say, well, what does everybody else eat then? Meat and lettuce, you know. There's other food in the world.
Right. I think their concern is that you don't get protein, but you can get protein, you know, especially now with all the plant-based powders.
Well, let's put it like this. If they're worried about protein deficiency, you know, if you wouldn't want to, as Philip Day would say, you wouldn't want to go down to the zoo and arm wrestle a gorilla. I mean, that's plant protein for you.
Right.
Horses do okay on it, too.
I used pre-digested protein when I had cancer because my doctor recommended that so that I got enough protein. And he didn't want the protein interfering with the pancreatic enzymes.
Yeah.
And so he took me off all protein, including peanuts. I could have nuts, but I couldn't have peanuts because they're a high source of protein.
Well, and also, they're not really a nut, are they? They're a legume, apparently.
Right, right. They are, right. I hadn't thought of that, but nuts are usually...
Sure, taste like nuts, but...
Trees, aren't they? Yeah. Then, Jessica, is there anything else you'd like to say before we look at books, services, product?
Yeah, I would like to tell a little bit about the mental attitude and what difference it can make. When I got to 5 years... I got the letter that everybody wants from their consultant, or I got the news, you know, that every cancer patient wants, which is, I'll see you in a year, rather than the usual 6 months that goes on forever. And anyway, I'd been to see him, and I said, he said, I'll see you in 6 months. And I said, oh, but you said you'd think about, you know, let me come back in a year this time, because I still listened to what he said, because we had an agreement and we always have. And he said, yes, well, I've thought about it and I'd like to see you in 6 months. And I said, yeah, but you said that it would be a year. And he said, yes, I did. But now I'm saying 6 months. So he said, well, I'll tell you what, and this is a great compromise. He said, book it in for 6 months time. And when we get your blood test results, if they are good again, then I'll let you know, and then you can change it and make it a year. So well, you can't argue with that, can you?
No, not even.
I can argue with that. So anyway, that's what we did. So on the 29th of February 2012, I got the letter which said, very delighted to tell you that your blood test results are all nicely normal, so please change your appointment as Gus. And you would think then that I would have gone into overdrive of happiness and joy. And instead, I went completely the other way, because in my mind's eye, looking forward to that time, I'd always imagined he'd tell me at the hospital, and I'd phone my parents, and then I'd phone my ex's, you know, mother, and we'd come back and tell all our friends here. And it was completely the opposite. I was in the house alone. My parents were dead. I'd lost contact with my family. And suddenly, I call it in England, you say, I came over all unnecessary. And I just didn't know what to make of it. And I looked around the house, and it just, it suddenly, everything faded to old and black and white. And I thought, oh my God, you know, what now? And I hit the deck really badly. I really went downhill very badly. And I always say, you know, I was on the deck so long, I could have sold advertising space on the soles of my boot. And I fell off the wagon a bit. I started to drink a bit, not as a drunk or anything like that, but I just didn't care. I didn't really go off the diet, just because it's such an ingrained habit, it would be almost impossible. But I ran out of reasons. I just ran out of reasons. I'd lost so many people over those years as well, that I just ran out of reasons to keep going. And when I went to see my consultant again after the year, I already knew that the worst had happened, and the tumour that had been completely dormant, which was interesting, because while I was doing the intravenous vitamin C, I was being scanned, and the radiologist said that the tumour's breaking down exactly the way a tumour breaks down with chemo. But anyway, when I went back to the hospital, my ex's mum was in the room, because you either bring a chaperone or you get a chaperone. And Sheila always wanted to come with me, because she wanted to make sure I had some kind of family support. And he said to me, you know, as soon as he looked for me, he said, what's been going on? And I said, oh, you know, it's life. And he said, well, you know, well, tell me what's been going on. And I didn't say too much. And I just said, well, you know, this, that and the other. And I explained a few things about all the death, being alone and just running out of reasons, really. And I said, you know, I've got such a hard job with a lot of traveling and working with senior executives and things. It's high pressure, which I enjoy. I said, but I seem that all I'm doing is working myself to death, earn the money, pay for treatments, keep myself alive, so I can just carry on working myself to death. And I just can't think of a reason for doing it all. So he asked me to come back in 6 months. He said, look, all I can offer you is radiotherapy. Well, I didn't even look at him. And he said, would you come back in 6 months? And I said, I don't know. And I'd never refused before. And anyway, he kept asking me, to, and pressing me, please, would you just think about it? So eventually I said to him, I'll just think about it. I had no intention of thinking about it. I was checking out. I'd basically got rid of everything in my house, even my winter coat, because I knew there's only two ways out of this. I've got a death through cancer, or I take care of things myself. So I thought, well, I'm not going to go the slow way. I've just seen that going on, and I'm not doing that. So I was committed to that. I showed up for the appointment with him, because I'd never not done that, and I owed him that much, but I had no intentions of ever going back. It was my last visit. And he did everything he could to persuade me, and in the end he just said, would you please just think about it? And I said, and he didn't know all the rest that I'd done, or that I wasn't coming back, but he knew something was different. And I said, okay, I'll think about it. I still couldn't look at him. And anyway, I didn't want to tell him all the ins and outs, because my ex's mum was sitting there, and I didn't want her being too upset. And as I went to leave, we always have a little peck on the cheek, you know, because you're with someone for years, and a lot of consultants are like that. And I just gave him a peck on the cheek and was about to walk away. And he suddenly embraced me. And I don't know how long it was for. It could have been just a few seconds, and probably was. But it was something changed in me then, because it was that one simple act of compassion from one human being to another. And I remember I was looking at the floor, and then I looked him right in the eye, and I said to him, "Do you know what, Mr. Kissing?" I said, "I might have run out of reasons for carrying on, but I'm going to do it again out of bloody-mindedness." So he said, he was beaming all over his face, and it was a genuine smile, you know, and he said, "Right." He said, "Okay." I said, "When do you want me to come in?" And he said, "Can you come in 6 months?" I said, "I will." And I went straight back on the wagon again. And that was in the January. In the July, I brought him half the tumour in a histology pot for him to examine, and I did a black salve treatment in the meantime. He sent that sample off to the lab. I kept half of it just in case it got lost or damaged or something. The histology results on that from the lab showed that it was tumour tissue that was completely necrotized, so no viable cells. And I've never looked back from that point on. So since then, we are now co-authoring a review paper on the doctor-patient relationship and its impact on disease outcome, with a proposal or proposition that if patients were matched with their doctors, we may have not only a better disease outcome, but also make doctors' work less stressful and more rewarding if we're matched up with one another as near as we can be. It wouldn't cost really much or any money to implement. And the second thing, he's commissioned me to write for a medical journal that he and some other senior breast cancer specialists are putting together. It's a manual for registrars and new consultants in breast cancer to share with them the tips and tricks of the trade and what actually happens when you're in practice, which you are not trained for. These things just happen. And he's asked me, well, I'm in the process of writing it now, of the most popular integrated and alternative breast cancer treatments with all of the research links to go with it, so that new consultants will have some kind of understanding that patients are doing this. They may not be sharing it, but at least it gives them the knowledge so that they can open conversations with patients.
Now, when do you anticipate that the research on the matching of doctor with patient will be complete?
Well, the first thing we've got to finish, we have a deadline of December to finish the writing of this book, because there are several authors for it. I'm a contributing author. I think I'm the only non-medic who's contributing. Also, there's going to be 20 case histories woven for it, of which one will be mine, because I'm completely and utterly medically untreated. But so that will be December when the deadline of that finishes. And then we've already started the review paper, looking at the research papers and writing summaries and things. I'm actually much better at doing homework than he is. So we're cracking straight on with that afterwards.
Well, I'm interested in that because I, as a believer in the holistic approach, you know, I look at, and my last book, which is Reducing Your Cancer Risk, I look at compassion, forgiveness, gratitude, all of what I call the spiritual attributes. Other people say that they aren't spiritual attributes, but for me, they are. And so I'd be very interested in the results of that research. So that's why I'm asking.
Yes, definitely. I'm very keen on implementing things that cost no time and no money, but have a can have a potentially mega effect on people's health.
Right.
And the other thing that I'm really interested in implementing is that doctors are empowered and protected to tell patients that at the very least, it won't do them any harm, but it may have a very positive impact on their prognosis if they refrain from the consumption of refined sugars and carbohydrates. To me, it's almost scandalous that they're not allowed in the UK to share that information, even though PET scan relies and exploits that fact.
Right. So, Jessica, then, would you tell us about work services, products that you have, and how the listeners can reach you?
Well, the listeners can reach me on the information that I gave you, which is the three W's, www.jessicarichards.co.uk. And on that website, there's also a page called The Topic of Cancer, which is the name of my book. The book gets sold all over the world. It's just a practical guide for anyone who's been diagnosed with cancer. It's not about alternative treatments. It's just 10 chapters 10 things in each chapter. The book I was looking for when I was diagnosed, actually, just practical stuff without having to read endless stories of other people's that may or may not have any relevance to me. And it's also for their friends and families as well, how to practically help somebody. The funds that come from that book is just ploughed into the next printing of it. Actually, there's really, I'm not making millions out of that. I didn't write it for that. I wrote it to make things a little bit more straightforward for other people.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm the author of that book, The Topic of Cancer. I'm a contributing author to A Cancer Revolution, and that's produced by a charity in the UK called Yes to Life. And all proceeds from that book, none of us contributing authors had anything from that financially, and we didn't want it. All the proceeds of that goes towards helping fund cancer patients in integrated pathways of care and with information and knowledge. And other than that, I do have a day job, so I'm happy to speak to people or Skype with people whenever I find time to do that, and I don't take money from cancer patients because they've got enough to worry about.
Right. I'm the same, Jessica. I don't ever take money. I often will talk with someone an hour and a half, 2 hours. The only time it's a little, I never say anything, but I often get calls at midnight, and they're usually from people in California, and it's 9 o'clock there. And for some reason, that's when people want to talk, I guess because the activities of the day are gone. So I may talk with them for an hour and a half, 2 hours. And then when I hang up, I'm so wound up, I have trouble getting back sleep. So it takes me a couple days to overcome that because I'm 85.
But, oh, bless you.
But, you know, I feel...
Well, I kind of manage my time slightly differently from that. So, you know, I'm happy to talk with people, but there is a limited amount of time because I just physically wouldn't be able to go on and go to work and pay my bills and everything else. But I find most cancer patients are just, they like that one conversation or an email or something like that, or just a message on Messenger. It's not the amount of time. It's just the fact that somebody cares about them without even knowing them. You know, you just actually do care about them as a human being.
Well,
and
a lot of the calls,
give them that kind of moral support.
A lot of the calls that I get, though, people have a lot of questions, you know.
Well, you've got some fantastic information, though. You see, I'm not a medic. I'm not allowed to give treatment information or anything like that. But with you, you have access to so much, and I can understand how valuable that is and why people would want to speak to you.
Yeah, I have to say, though, Jessica, I have to be very careful in how I present it. So I usually say, this is what I did that worked for me.
Yeah, or, that's all you can say, what you did and what worked for you.
Because otherwise I could be accused of prescribing medicine.
God forbid.
Right.
Well, I think people probably want to speak to you longer just because you probably sound much more gorgeous than I do, Carl.
Well, I don't know about that, Jessica. I mean, you sound pretty gorgeous.
Oh, well, let's just sound gorgeous together. I said that with an American accent, too. Gorgeous.
Yeah, you did. Well, I appreciate this very much, Jessica. It's been interesting, and I always like to talk with people that, you know, use a holistic approach and consider the mental and the spiritual, and also use natural things, and also feel empowered and stand up for themselves, you know, and just don't follow along with what the doctor says. I mean, that's...
I would like to say, though, that some people who are in an urgent situation, because I'm not anti anything, I'm pro anything that works, and personally, I wouldn't care what it was. If it was a drug, a chemical, a flower, a crystal, I don't care. If it works, I'll have it. If I've seen the research behind it. And what I will say is sometimes people in a situation, they need to pull out the big guns immediately to stop or slow down something to get to a safe place, and then start making other choices. I have come across people who feel like, oh, I don't want to cave in and do this and do that. Nobody's caving in. You have to be very, very strong and adamant that you will do what is right for you at that particular time, regardless of what other people think. And if you think there's a, because there's a lot of work on repurposed drugs that can be profoundly useful in an integrated approach. And if that works for someone, they shouldn't feel that they are less than because they've chosen that or that they've caved into anything because they haven't.
Right. I agree. But, and I agree also that people have to make their own decisions.
Yeah.
But I want to make sure that people see all of the alternatives because
they
so
have to
often
have information
when they
so
go,
they have options.
The doctor gives them part of the alternatives. And so once they have all the alternatives, then I support whatever decision they make. And my brother is a good example. He was 91.
Wow.
His doctor prescribed lung cancer, which I thought was interesting because that's what I had.
Yeah.
He wanted to do radiation because he said he couldn't tolerate chemo. So my brother decided on radiation. And so I said, fine. I said, but would you add Laetril, which is what I use?
Yep.
I supported that because I feel that once you make a decision, it's empowering. And then once you place doubt in people's minds, and that takes energy that they don't need to be spending on the
Absolutely.
Decision that they've already made. And
people
so,
know best for themselves.
Right.
And the only reason that I've gone public is because I'm quite adamant that as patients, we really deserve to have access to information so mm-hmm. that we can make informed choices on our own pathway of care. And certainly in the UK, our doctors and medics and healthcare assistants deserve to be able to have access to the same information and to share that with us without fear of breaking the law or of losing their good name and reputation.
Right, right. Again, I appreciate this very much, and we'll send you the link when it's ready and hope that we have the opportunity to talk again.
Oh, I hope we do. It's been lovely speaking with you. And I'm very much looking forward to hearing more about your work and sharing it on my Facebook page and such like too.
Great.
I have lots of Americans on my Facebook app. I call them my American cousins.
Great. Thank you, Jessica.
Thank you. Take care. Lots of love to you.
And you too. Because we have some time left today, I would like to talk with you about my new Cancer Foundation and an opportunity that I think will be of interest to you. My new Cancer Foundation can be found at www.holisticcancerfoundation.com. On the site, you will see first a video of the foundation. You will also see the goals, which are education, research, and patient care. I have an impressive board and advisory board for this foundation, and you can look at these on the site. I have worked for over a year getting content on the site, including interviews with cancer patients and doctors, cancer research, cancer treatment, and what is different on my site is research on mental, spiritual interventions and interviews with experts for interviews like affirmations, visualization, prayer, meditation, gratitude, forgiveness, and many others. These are included because I believe that disease results from multiple factors and consequently a holistic approach is necessary for recovering from cancer. To me, prayer, faith, optimism, and others are as important in treatment as medication, supplements, diet, and other interventions. I have experience to support this belief. Having used a holistic approach since 1970, when I volunteered as a camp nurse for the Edgar Cayce organization. It was natural to use this approach when I was diagnosed with lung cancer in 1974. Curing this disease with all natural, holistic interventions, I continued using the approach in my personal life and with clients, and am now considered a pioneer in holistic health. I have worked for the past 5 to 6 months on the website section on prevention of cancer. This resulted in a soft-covered booklet for $14.95 and a hard-covered booklet for $24.95, available on my website, www.holisticcancerfoundation.com, or on Amazon or Barnes & Noble's. The booklet is 174 pages long and is titled Reducing Your Cancer Risk, A Holistic Approach. First, as a longtime educator, I like to start my writing with a theoretical framework in which to place the content. So there is first a theoretical framework based upon public health concepts. This framework will basically look at, first, ways to reduce the risk of known environmental carcinogens, and second, ways to strengthen the host against environmental and other carcinogens. Content on reducing the effect of known environmental carcinogens include electromagnetic waves, toxic chemicals such as BPA, formaldehyde, toxic metals such as aluminum and mercury, and last, ultraviolet waves. For all areas, there will be research related to the carcinogen, what you can do to reduce the risk, and an interview with an expert for many of these. The second part looks at ways to strengthen the host or you against carcinogens. It includes areas such as physical activities, nutrition including genetically modified organisms, organic foods, etc., fluids, water and milk, supplements, vitamins, minerals, immune builders, sleep, smoking cessation, music, and then it moves into mental, spiritual interventions that includes affirmations, compassion, faith, forgiveness, gratitude, meditation, optimism, prayer, relaxation exercises, serving or helping others, social support, stress reduction, and visualization. Again, for each of these, there is research, what to do to strengthen yourself against cancer, and interviews with experts for many of these. You will hear interviews with 30 cancer or related experts on mental spiritual interventions, such as forgiveness, gratitude, faith, and compassion. You'll hear about omega-3s, genetically modified organisms, genetically modified food, plant-based and other nutritional diets, smoking cessation, chemical and mental carcinogens, immune builders, music, and much, much more. So I hope this will be helpful to you and will help in preventing cancer in the future. I thank you for joining me today on the Holistic Health Show, and I hope some of the information will be useful to you. I invite you to my websites, holistichealthshow.com, where you will find all shows for the past 7 years under the blog. You will also find much of the research on natural ways to deal with cancer and other health conditions, and can sign up for my free monthly newsletter. On my website, beatlungcancer.net, you will find many of the 135 interviews from radio and television over the past 2 years about my book on treating lung cancer naturally and holistically when I was diagnosed 41 years ago next month and given 6 months to live by traditional medicine who offered chemo and surgery. This book was published in November 2012 and was a bestseller on Amazon. You will find endorsements of the book, a place to buy the book, and an earlier one from 2007 titled Healthy Holistic Aging, A Blueprint for Success. On my third website, you will find information on the Carl O'Helvey Holistic Cancer Foundation, begun last year and currently in the phase of completing the website. This site is at www.holisticcancerfoundation.com. Information on how the foundation differs from others, board members, research on holistic natural ways to deal with cancer, including mental and spiritual interventions, interviews with cancer physicians and survivors, and more. If you would like to donate to the work I am supporting, there is a tab to donate, and I can offer you a tax exemption receipt if living in the United States. I also invite you to join me on Facebook at my Facebook page, www.facebook.com/Carl Helvey, on my Holistic Health Show page at www.facebook.com/pages/Holistic Health Show, and the Carl O. Helvey Holistic Cancer Foundation page at www.facebook.com/beatlungcancernaturalalternative. On LinkedIn, I invite you to join me under my name, Dr. Carl O. Helvey. On Twitter, I invite you to join me at www.twitter.com/HolistHealthShow, HolistHealthShow. I wish you a great week, and I look forward to having you here in 2 weeks. I'm Dr. Carl O. Helvey, your host.